As I was discussing by email with your minister about what would be appropriate to consider this evening, I wanted to give the update and almost got into preaching on the update itself. But I thought it would be useful for us to look at these two passages in 2 and 3 John. I was a regular pastor for 18 years, so I have been on the other side of the fence, as it were, and now I have been the rich recipient of the hospitality and the kindness and the welcome and all that goes with that regarding a traveling missionary or minister teacher. Receiving traveling ministers, preachers, teachers, whatever it may be, it's not a new thing. It's been around since the beginning. And you can see that God has given the church advice as to how do we receive people who come into our midst, you know, like myself this evening. And the advice in 2 John is don't welcome. And the advice in 3 John is do welcome. But what are the details and why the difference? Just another little aspect of the backdrop is that there were a lot of traveling preachers at the time, and there were a lot of charlatans, and there were a lot of heretics. And the church that was good at showing a gracious and kind and generosity of spirit were easy prey for the charlatans. And then the church that was tight and harsh, it was a danger for them to be too unwelcoming. And the biblical balance, and biblical balance is never easy, is it? But the biblical balance is converging these two letters, 2 and 3 John. Another backdrop that we need to know was that the major heresy at the time was Gnosticism, which believed a number of things, but in general terms, physical things are evil, spiritual things are good, and if you have a gnosis, if you have the knowledge, well, that's what you really should be seeking. And so Paul, you remember, had to face the super apostles. John had to face the Gnostics with superior knowledge. And so there's nothing new under the sun. Satan's strategy was a simple one. Divide and conquer. Prey on those very kindly, gracious churches with charlatans, and infiltrate the legalists that won't have anyone come through their doors. And it worked. It worked at the end of the first century. So John had to write this. And it's interesting also, as you continue on into church history into the second century, this is the end, very near to the end of the first century. At the start of the second century, there was a similar problem, because if you read in some of the early teachings, there was the Didache, a document of the early church of the second century, not scripture, but nonetheless gives you an insight into early church problems. And it was fascinating to read just a little of the Didache. And I commend it to you. I know your minister reads all these documents at 5 a.m. kind of thing in the morning, but I came across this, and it really is on the button, and it's bang up to date. And this is the Didache from this early second century. An apostle may stay one day, or if necessary, two, but if he stays 3 days, he is a false prophet. So when did I get here? I got here just last night. One, two. Yeah, I need to watch myself and get out of town. I'm staying in Bangor 2 nights, not 3. Okay. And it continues on, when he leaves, he may receive enough food for the journey. But if he asks for money, he is a false prophet. Second century. The Christian traveler must not be entertained free for more than 2 or 3 days. If he wants to settle, he must work. If he refuses, he is trading on Christ. Wow, what an excellent, discerning document of the second century. But it gives us an insight into the problem that John was facing at the end of the first was still a problem at the start of the second century. So that's kind of the backdrop, the historical backdrop, and even the problematic backdrop. This is not going to be an in-depth study of these two letters, so please forgive me. I'm really just going to focus in on those two things. Don't welcome, do welcome. And in 2 John, I summarize it under recognize and resist. And in 3 John, I'm summarizing it under appreciate and assist. Recognize and resist. Appreciate and assist. So there were deceivers. 2 John 7. Many deceivers have gone out into the world. Or the super apostles, 2 John 9. He who goes on ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ. Running ahead with some superior teaching. Recognize them. Now, as a traveling preacher, I want to confess to you, traveling preachers have a few good sermons in the bag. This isn't the first time I've preached this. Confession. One of the commentators actually writes, a clever rogue could make a very comfortable living as an itinerant prophet. This is what was happening. And it's happening today as well. And Matthew Henry comments, bad work should not be consecrated or recommended to the divine benediction. In other words, don't give your blessing, financial, prayerful, or anything. Don't give your blessing to bad work. Now, my American cousins love the accent. They love the exotic accent. And traveling preachers with exotic accents can be warmly received. And those of us who do this full-time, and I've been doing it for 14 years, we're good at it. We're placed on a pedestal. We're the visiting guy with the wonderful, fancy missionary stuff. And it's easy to fool a careless, non-discerning congregation. Recognize and resist. Because if you greet him, verse 11 of 2 John, if you support, if you welcome, you share in his wicked work. I know that you take a special interest in various missionary societies. I have been to churches where the missions policy is all over the map. In other words, there is no discernment. We've been supporting this person in whatever country for the past 20 years. We never see him from one end of the year to the next, but he's working. We support him. No, don't. Call us to account. Make the traveling missionary accountable to the local church. Don't greet him. Don't support him. Recognize and resist. I was once invited to do a midweek in a church in Mississippi. And this is actually 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I think. But before I even did the midweek meeting, I had to meet the elders. They asked my testimony. They asked my theology. They asked about CWI's history and CWI's theology. We must have passed the test because I've preached there every year since for the past 11 years. But they were doing what the Americans call due diligence. They were doing the work of recognizing and resisting if necessary. And I think more and more of our churches need to do that. As I said, I've sat on both sides and I've seen in the church life it's too easy. It's non-discerning. And so the traveling missionary on the pedestal, as Matthew Henry said, or one of the other commentators, sorry, could make a very comfortable living as an itinerant prophet. Church, be discerning. Have you a missions policy? Make sure you have one. watch over it, check it, review it, adapt it, change it, recognize and resist. But we must move on. Second, and I'll take a little bit more time on this second area, appreciate and assist. So when you turn the page and you come to 3 John, the situation in 3 John had gone on a little bit. This is a few years later. John has to write another letter. Because what was happening was Demetrius, a traveling preacher, was excluded from welcome by a settled minister, Diotrephes, who loved to be first. And John writes to this go-between, in between Gaius. He's the ordinary church member that's caught in between. And John writes to him, complaining about his minister, and saying, you really ought to have this guy, because he's good. And you see, what was happening was, 2 John, there's a lot of itinerant ministry happening among the early church. By the time of 3 John, things were settling down into what we have now. Settled ministries, settled pastorates, rather than traveling ministries. But there was still a little bit of the traveling ministry, or traveling preacher, traveling missionary. And so there's natural tension. Diotrephes didn't want any of his salary going off to the travelers. And John had to send a stern letter to a church member, Gaius, verse 1, to talk about worthy recipients of support. Demetrius was worthy. But Pastor Diotrephes, top guy, didn't want to give him any welcome. So you can see that tension, and it's still around today. What do we do with traveling missionaries and ministries? I want to take some principles. Well, really take some principles from both the letters, and you'll see it as we proceed. Principles, application, Scripture's advice on how to receive traveling missionaries. First of all, I want to say we need to consider the conduct of the missionary. I put this at the highest order. I make no apology for it. By their fruit you shall know them. Discernment is in seeing the fruit in the lives of those who come into your midst. I make it a policy in my ministry to stay overnight with as many that I can. It not only does it save hotel costs and whatever, but it also means that I can visit with the pastor. So last night I was staying in Crumlin, and I stayed with the pastor, and we spoke to the wee hours, as we always do in Northern Ireland, and I really felt to be back home. But that not only was good, and it was wonderful just to talk and just to get on, it gave him an opportunity to see and to check and make me accountable. What is your life like? What's your spiritual life like? How's your walk with the Lord? What books are you reading? Church is so lacking. We need to be careful, even ruthless, lest we share in their wicked work. As you consider missionary support, not just for us, but for any other missionary society that you're associated with, if I can say to you, even as a pastor and former pastor, check us. Make us accountable to you. What am I like out of the pulpit? We're all good at presenting ourselves in the pulpit, but what am I like out of the pulpit? What is my family life like? And so you see here, Demetrius, what was his conduct? Consider the conduct of the missionary. What was Demetrius' conduct? Well, we find that in 3 John 12. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. We also add our testimony, and you know our testimony is true. Demetrius is having good word put upon good word. Demetrius is kosher, if I can put it in those terms. Demetrius is good. There is a conduct that is consistent with the message. Demetrius has integrity. Demetrius is worthy of your support. And I would simply say that's the priority as you consider what missionaries, what ministries, what missionary societies that you wish to get alongside. We need your prayer support. We need you to be with us in so many ways, but make us accountable to the local church. So consider the conduct of the missionaries. Secondly, consider the contempt of their ministry. Consider the contempt. Verse 7 of chapter 3. They have gone out for the sake of the name. In other words, we ask the question, is it a gospel ministry? Is it telling people about Jesus? Is it a God-honoring ministry? Is it a ministry that is church-based and has that local accountability? Verse 6 says, they are testifying in the churches. They are living accountably before churches. Many ministries are vying for a slice of the pie. We need to be appreciating and assisting those that are worthy of the welcome. Consider the conduct of the missionary. Consider the contempt of the ministry. Take the literature. Pray over it. What is being done? Is it a gospel ministry? Is it solid? Is it kosher? Again, make us prove to you that we are worthy of your support. Well then, thirdly, if we pass the test, consider the worthiness of your support. Because then you are sharing, not in a wicked work, but in a worthy work. And if it's worthy, you are to send them on their way. Third John 6, you are to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God. Now that's stunning. Because effectively it's saying is if they pass the test, that if this is a gospel ministry and if it's consistent and the content and the conduct and if it's all passing that test, then send them on their way worthily. And worthy of God Himself. That is stunning for the church to contemplate. 3 John 5 says, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are. It is a faithful thing that you do. It is something that takes effort. Your support, your interest, your prayer, your standing with us in the right sense of standing, it is a faithful thing. It is an effortful thing for these brothers who you don't really know. They're strangers. And I come to you in some ways kind of as a middleman, and I tell you about Igal and Aviel and David, David. It's interesting, David Zadok in Israel, you know what his name means? I know the Hebrew scholars here know what his name means. David Zadok, David the righteous. David the righteous in Israel. But I tell you of their work. And I hope, I know, that as you trust me and trust me to trust them, so even though they are strangers, verse 5, it's a faithful thing that you do for the brothers. Consider the conduct, consider the content, consider the worthiness, consider the necessity. Consider the necessity, verse 7. They have gone out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. We're not paid by the goyim, the unclean. We get some tax breaks. In America, the tax system is different from the tax system here. My wife is an accountant, and I bought her a coffee mug one time, and it had "I love spreadsheets." And that's my wife has a perverse interest in accountancy, and I'm so glad that I can leave those things in her hands. And she has had to work through all the American tax systems, and she looks upon it kind of like a Sudoku puzzle. Yeah, I know that's really pretty perverted, but that's her head, and I'm so glad she takes care of that. We are not paid by the goyim. We are paid by God, effectively. We're paid by, as the Lord's workers, through the church. Verse 7, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. And if I can say this again, after many, many years of ministry, I have had colleagues who have had to leave the ministry, or colleagues that have had to go other places, quite simply because they were not paid in a worthy manner. If the government considers that you are on a low enough income to receive government help, then, church, something is wrong. Consider the necessity of the support for the local pastor. I can say that as a visitor. Consider the necessity of support for all worthy kingdom works. We do what we do because you pay for it. And where you cannot go, your money and your prayers do go. We go out for the sake of the name, accepting no help from the Gentiles or the unclean, the pagans. Consider the necessity. Then consider the obligation. This is where it's getting a little further, driving it in. Consider the obligation. Verse 8. Therefore, we ought to support people like these. So if the conduct is right and the content is right and the worthiness is right and the necessity is right, then we ought to support people like these, that we may be fellow workers. Matthew Henry says, there are those who are not called to preach the gospel themselves, who may yet contribute to the progress of it. If it's worthy, then it's welcome. And the Christian church is under an obligation. You ought to. And then consider the privilege. It's a privilege. It's a privilege for me to be with you. You've no idea how such a joy it is to me just to be among my own folk, as we might say. It's a privilege to be with you and just to see the faces and just renew friendships, if only briefly. But it's also a privilege, if I can say it, you know what I mean by it, but it's a privilege for you to share in the work of the kingdom across the world. And as God has blessed us, so may we bless others. Faithful love for the brethren is doing something in mission partnership. Again, if I can just give my own impression, I have been the rich recipient of hospitality, kindness for almost 14 years. I have homes. I had homes here in Northern Ireland. I have homes in the U.S., that have a room that they call an Elisha room for the traveling man of God. And they treat me royally. And I haven't done the maths and worked out how many nights I'm away from home, but it's something like 70 or 80 or 90 nights. And most of that is not spent in hotels. Sometimes it's necessary, if you're driving a long distance, as I do, that you have to have an overnight in a hotel. I think less than a quarter of my overnights are spent in hotels. So the other three quarters are spent with people who give me the rich hospitality, and I am accountable. But I receive the meals, and I receive the calories, and you can tell, can't you? But I receive those abundant blessings from the Lord's people. There are many scriptures, and we need to draw to a conclusion, but there are many scriptures that talk about showing hospitality, aren't there? It's a Jewish thing to show hospitality to strangers. But then so also it is a Christian thing. So the Jewish apostle Paul, Shaul, he said the Christian is to be given to hospitality, Romans 12, 13. Or he is to show hospitality without grudging, 1 Peter 4, 9. Or to be a lover of hospitality, Titus 1, 8. And you are to send us on our way in a manner worthy of God. There's a worthiness, a necessity, an obligation, a privilege, because you are sending out the workers to the harvest field. Matthew 10, whoever receives you receives me. Again, that's stunning. That a manner worthy of God. Whoever receives you receives me. The one who receives a prophet because he is a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And the one who gives even a cup of cold water because he is my disciple will no means lose his reward. My friends, recognize and resist. Plenty of charlatans. Plenty of silly ministries that have nothing to do with the gospel. Recognize and resist, and then appreciate and assist. Galatians 6, as we have opportunity, let us do good unto all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Thank you, Newton Yards, RP, for your support for the traveling missionaries, for this traveling missionary as well. Well, let's bow together in prayer.